Has America squandered 250 years of freedom? Is it too late? The Ascot Media Group writes, as America nears its 250th birthday, Navy veteran and civic reform advocate Michael Biedenbaugh warns that the nation is at risk of losing what he calls 250 years of investment in liberty. Biedenbaugh is the author of Reviving Our Republic, 95 Theses for the Future of America. Now, continuing with Ascot Media Group, they say, through his Project 2026 initiative, Biedenbaugh urges citizens to rise above partisanship and reclaim the principles that built this country before it's too late. And he is quoted as saying, we spent nearly 2.5 centuries building a republic rooted in freedom and accountability. But if we allow division, corruption, and corporate dominion or domination to prevail, we could lose everything generations fought to secure. I'm Jerry Newcomb. This is Vocal Point, and Michael Biedenbaugh joins us now to discuss all these things. Michael, it's great to have you on the program. Thank you for being with us.
Well, Jerry, thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
I probably should call you Mike, since your website is Mike Biedenbaugh. So I'll do that.
That's fine. That's perfect.
All right. Martin Luther, famously, on October 31st, 1517, he nailed 95 theses to the wall and this to the Wittenberg Cathedral door, and this began the whole process of the Reformation. Basically, it was 95 protests to some specific practices, calling that to the attention. So tell us about your 95 theses for the future of America.
Well, growing up in a Lutheran area, my German ancestors, when they arrived here, they were Lutheran. And being a historian, I appreciate the tie-in to what a single man that's educated was able to do by posting these theses that he had to say, these are the indulgences that need to be corrected on a corrupted Catholic Church in the 16th century. So I just appreciated the poetry in having that same concept on our Federal Republic, because I believe over the past 250 years, we have slowly, as we became a world power, we have compromised the original intent of our Constitution and our checks and balances, and they've been compromised. And so that's where why I tied into that.
Okay, let's use some examples, okay? By the way, I have not seen your book, but if I did, would I see it broken down into 95 different points, or is that one aspect of the book itself?
No. So what I did was...
That's the concept,
so the 95 theses... Oh, are you...
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, in other words, that's the concept you're talking, but go ahead. I'm sorry, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the 95 theses is the framework upon which I took George Washington's farewell address. Because basically when he left office, he said, here are the things you need to think about, American citizens, to keep this republic. You know, Franklin made clear, it's a republic if you can keep it after the Constitutional Convention. After 8 years in office, Washington realized there are things and vulnerable issues that they need to deal with. And so what he did in his farewell address laid out three things, false patriotism and party influence, fiscal reliability and fiscal issues and responsibility, and foreign entanglements with foreign power. So there's three. I added a fourth one, the corporatization of our society and the extraction of capital out of rural areas into the urban areas and corporate facilitation of that. And so those are the main four groups. And so, you know, in a nutshell, with the party and the political aspect of it, it's really about putting representatives' power base back in representing their people and not representing other interests that make them more powerful than they were ever intended to be. You know, take away their right to trade stocks, insider stocks, put term limits, those sort of things. It's about 30 different theses that just deal with that. And then foreign entanglements, I believe fully that we need to have a policy of neutrality around the world. Now, that is not isolationism. That is full engagement, but a neutral engagement to where we do not presume we have the right to dictate other countries how they are supposed to evolve or exist. Have as much trade as possible, but stay out of their business as long as they stay out of ours.
I see. Okay. Now, one of the statements from Washington from the farewell address is very famous. Of all the dispositions and habits which lead to political prosperity, religion and morality are indispensable supports. And he basically talks about, you know, nothing should be done to subvert those two great pillars of human happiness. How, where does that fit in your call for revising and reviving our republic?
Well, it fits in because he's making a judgment based on the people having the freedom to worship as their heart shows themselves and is being exposed to them. And so that's just the importance of government not dictating what religion or what spiritual connectivity people have. He believes people need a moral center, and religion had been the foundation of that.
So in a sense, your book is kind of like taking George Washington's, what I believe it was 1796, farewell address and saying, hey, folks, this applies in 2026 and 2025.
Really? Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I consider Washington, I like calling the folks who created the Constitution architects. This comes back from my preservation work of restoring buildings. I like calling them architects. So that's what they did. They constructed an edifice that could house this society as the society existed at the time, but it also allowed for amendments or, let's say, additions and rehabilitation of that structure. And what I feel has happened, he gave us in his farewell address a maintenance manual of that structure. And what has happened is we've had bad landlords that did not take care of the maintenance manual, did not watch it. And over the past century, we have slowly eroded many of the systems that were put in place in the original Constitution to maintain checks and balances, federalism, and local sovereignty that is necessary for a free and healthy republic run by the people that is part of a larger government.
Do you think the Founding Fathers wanted career politicians who would just be there for decades and decades?
Absolutely not. And this is part of the thing that's happened is there's so much power put into the House of Representatives. They never imagined us being, they knew we would be a powerful empire, but they never imagined that representation would get so corrupted by that power. Because originally each representative only represented 35,000 constituents. Now it's 750,000. And plus with worldwide hegemony like we have now with either money supply and power and military power, that puts even more power in the hands of representatives, with meaning attracting a lot of financial support from outside interests. When I ran for Congress, my opposition was able to raise $900,000. Almost a third of that came from outside money to make sure they had a seat at her table, which I consider a form of colonialism outside. We need to stop anybody. Yes, I think it's perfectly fine for people to donate and give money to a candidate, but it needs to be only people, individuals who could vote for that candidate should have the right or ability to give them money. Nobody else or corporations.
One of your objectives, as I understand it, is to distinguish between natural citizens and corporate entities to ensure human voices, not corporate money, shape public policy. You may have alluded to some of that, but if you want to add more to it, go ahead.
Well, I appreciate that because that's one of the central things. The Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court was not a horrible decision in the sense of it didn't have precedence. They decided right if you're a constitutional conservative and a textualist. But what it shows us is we need to fix the Constitution to make sure we distinguish between natural personas citizens, individual citizens, which are we the people, and artificial personas, which are trusts and corporate entities. Over the past century and a half, we've had the presidents to give corporate security, personhood, for tax purposes and income purposes and all of these things. The Constitution needs to be amended to where it distinguishes from that. And if that is fixed, that will take care of a lot of our issues regarding money into campaigns and the abuse of that.
You also say we need to curb monopolies, breaking up concentrated power in media, healthcare, and finance to revive fair competition.
Yes. So this is one of the most insidious things that has happened in the trendy thrill of deregulation. We've forgotten the fact that, you know, communities need to be protected so that corporate entities can't pool so much capital that they can extract wealth outside of communities. And that's what's happened. So originally, here's a perfect example. Back in the 50s and 60s, we all know stories of how musical artists that wanted to break could take their tape buy or their record buy and try to get it played on the radio, and individual disc jockeys will start playing records. Or you look at the news and everybody says, why don't we have more people like Walter Cronkite? Well, the reason is the Telecommunications Act of 1996 destroyed the ability to protect locally owned radio stations, TV stations, and such as that. And it then allowed one corporate entity to own multiple outlets in one community. And that has nationalized. So now we have seven corporations that control over 80% of all our media airwaves, when it used to be 80 or 90 that used to control the airwaves. So we need to get back to that. That's really important.
Well, wait, I'm confused. Walter Cronkite was not ideal, as I understand things, in terms of back then there was a monopoly that the three major networks had, and then all these other independent stations were able to, you know, have competing voices. But it's interesting what you just said about that 80% statistic. But go ahead and elaborate.
So Walter Cronkite was part of one of the big three companies, but local stations were owned privately, and they could syndicate those channels. That is an issue there, but I'm talking more about local ownership on what they could and how it could be controlled. You know, one owner couldn't own more than one radio station in each market. Well, now that's gone.
I see what you're saying. Okay. How about the military-industrial complex? Your comments there.
Yes. Well, so there is a profit incentive for us to build weaponry. And ever since World War II, we have had incentivized warfare through companies that had to produce weaponry, and it has affected how we engage in foreign nations. We don't need a profit motive to engage in war. And right now, that is the case. There is a huge profit motive to make sure large mega corporations can produce hardware. If we remember, we won World War II, but we did not have the huge military industrial complex at the time to do it. Chrysler is the one that changed over making tanks, from making cars and making tanks. So this is something we need to really revisit, because as soon as World War II was over, we then immediately started creating companies that then had influence over politicians. And it's one of the reasons, one of the root causes, I say, we've had perpetual war, is because the power of that lobby.
All right. We're basically out of time. Thank you so much for joining us. MikeBiedenbaugh.com for more information. Biedenbaugh is spelled BedenBaugh. And again, the name of his book is Reviving Our Republic, 95 Theses for the Future of America. Mike, thanks so much for being with us. All the best.
Thank you so much, Jerry. And revivingourrepublic.com will be an easier one to get to. I appreciate that.
Surely. Okay, bye-bye now.